IVM. Hello and welcome to the Ganatantra podcast. I am Sarayu Natarajan.
And I'm Alok Prasanna Kumar.
And in this week's episode, continuing our series on federalism, we are joined by our first ever repeat guest, Dr. Kailash from the University of Hyderabad. Welcome, Kailash.
Thank you, and a pleasure to be back.
Yeah, glad to have you back, Kailash. Before we start off, I think most of you know who Dr. Kailash is, but let me start off. I think the best way to introduce is the fact that for the last year, ever since we recorded that episode with Kailash, I have been going around wherever I speak about federalism or write about federalism, beating on the gospel of how regionalist parties are different from regional parties. And there's a reason why Kailash is one of our first repeat guests is probably because I think it completely changed the way we thought about federalism.
Absolutely.
And politics in India.
It's not just your writings. It's also come up on the podcast multiple times with multiple guests where we've been able to use this frame to think about particularly politics within states, but also more broadly outcomes, particularly in the context of the 2019 elections. Yeah. I'll read the more banal introduction for the benefit of listeners who've joined us more recently.
Yeah.
Dr. K.K. Kailash is with the Department of Political Science at the University of Hyderabad and has been associated with the Lokneeti since 2007. His research interests focus on political parties in elections, coalition politics, and processes and issues of federalism in contemporary India. He is a member of the editorial managing team of the Studies in Indian Politics. He is an honorary fellow of the Center for Multilevel Federalism, Institute of Social Sciences, New Delhi. Before coming to Hyderabad Central University, he previously worked in Punjab University, Chandigarh, and the Regional Institute of Education at Bhopal. Welcome back, Kailash.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And in this week's episode, what we really want to talk about is a theme that has been coming up again and again in the course of a lot of episodes. But one thing which I thought that we should get a solid deep dive on is the idea of asymmetric federalism. And the fact that the idea that the center or the federal, the state, the national unit doesn't enjoy exactly the same relation with every single subnational unit. Is something that I think is very important to understand in the context of India. So Kailash, perhaps we can just start with a little bit about the basics of asymmetric federalism for the benefit of our listeners who may have just been introduced to the topic.
Yeah, and I think we did touch upon this issue a little bit in other episodes with Dr. Suan, as well as the episodes on the CAA.
Yeah.
But I think the,
on
Jammu and Kashmir. But I think this is something that's come to the fore very recently as something that could also be a basis for mobilization in the electoral sphere. So would love to hear at least to start with an introduction of the idea and then we could dig deeper.
Yeah.
The concept of asymmetric federalism was first used in 1965 by a scholar called Charles Dalton. And he uses the concept very differently from the way we speak about it today. He basically is looking at studies of federalism that existed at that point of time. And he says that these studies assume that all states or provinces within a federation had equal relationships with the center as well as with each other. He then says that these different states or regions vary in size, population, resources, and so on. Therefore, it is unlikely that they could have equal relationships either with the center or with the states. So this is the original idea of what asymmetric federalism is. And then he then goes on to say that we should therefore not think of symmetrical relationships between states or with the center, but we should keep in mind that they can be differential relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today when we understand asymmetric federalism, we understand it very differently from this, and we speak of some states or some regions or some units having different rights compared to others. For instance, having special powers or having some autonomous space which others do not have, or which is what we understand federalism today. So the first type of federalism which we spoke of in terms of different regions, states, provinces, etc., that some would call as de facto asymmetry, and the legal constitutional sharing of power differently is called de jure asymmetry. So this is the background to asymmetric federalism.
Yeah, and I think India was always, I think in a way, de facto and de jure asymmetric federalism, mostly because I think, you know, this is at least ever, even right at the start, when you took a state the size of Uttar Pradesh and compared it to, say, even a tiny state like Sikkim and Goa, and the tinier states, I think, came into existence much later. But even then, you had a de facto difference in the sizes and the economies of the various provinces. But also in the constitution itself, Article 370 gave Jammu and Kashmir a special status, and that was followed up with multiple other states. But I think we sort of, and as Saryu was also discussing a little bit prior to this podcast, something about the way in which asymmetric federalism has played out in the politics of different states.
Yeah, so even if you were to look at the constitution itself, when the states were actually, like the 1951 constitution, we had actually four categories of states.
Yeah.
So you had the Part A states, the Part B, Part C, and Part D. And each of them had a different relationship with the former, that is the British government. So for instance, Part A was ruled directly by the British. Part B had princely states who had some sort of a different relationship with the British government. Part C was all the remaining princely states. And Part D was all the other territories that were there. Now, each of these had a sort of different negotiating and bargaining power when they actually came into the Union of India.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this whole idea of asymmetry in terms of, let's say, the practice of it and in terms of the bargaining that goes on actually begins immediately after independence, even with the formation of the Union of India. So for instance, when I think privy purses were given, I think this was based on a bargain where they took money and security in exchange for authority.
Yeah.
So this is the bargaining that goes on, and this is, I think, it's part of the whole idea of federalism, that there is constant bargaining and constant compromises that are being made. So we should look at asymmetric federalism not merely as a structure that is there, but it's an ongoing process where there is this continuous negotiation that goes on.
And how do we imagine, in some ways, you know, the end of this kind of continuous negotiation, as well as the sort of the idea of asymmetric federalism? Is it in some ways imagined because it is important to think about the way in which states need to be held together? Or does it come from an idea that somehow asymmetric federal arrangements can play a role in protection of certain kinds of minorities? Because what drives this process of ongoing negotiation in that sense?
Okay, I think you get what you're speaking of is there in the literature, which makes a distinction between the normative idea between asymmetric federalism and a more functional dimension of asymmetric federalism. The normative dimension actually speaks at when there are diversities, and when there are cultural entities which have special rights, they should be respected, they should be recognized, and that is the normative dimension there. Okay. Whereas the functional one is that where you would creatively use this mechanism to accommodate diversity and also sort out problems as they go by.
Understood.
So we have both these elements in the Indian constitution.
Understood. But the Indian experience has been mixed in terms of at least the functional dimension, which is, you know, in the ability to sort of grant special protection to cultural and national minorities. So how would one think about the Indian experience of asymmetric federalism in the context of these normative and functional goals?
Yeah, so there is one sharp critique that has come on the working of asymmetric federalism in India, and that is by Louise Tillon.
Of course.
Yeah, so she actually says that the normative idea is actually missing in the Indian constitution.
Which is the idea that states need to be held together by an idea of asymmetric federalism.
No, when we institute asymmetric federalism, was it with the express purpose of recognizing diversity? Was it for protecting certain cultural rights, religious rights? Or was it only for a short-term mechanism to tide over some crisis?
Understood.
So she argues, and she comes out very sharply in, I think, a couple of writings, where she would say that the instance of JNK is not the normative dimension. It was more of a functional thing, where you had a particular situation at hand, you wanted to deal with it, and consequently, you gave JNK a special status.
Right. But also, I wonder if the response to that critique is also that nobody thought of this in advance, and in the sense that India as a constitutional democratic republic was so new, so unimaginable, and so different from everything else that came before it, that in some ways the JNK practice, like we made a principle of pragmatism, if you so to speak, that the pragmatic need to keep JNK within the Indian Union also gave a framework for future asymmetric federalism.
Yes, I think that's a reasonable response to that, because when the Indian constitution was adopted, I don't think the concept of asymmetric federalism itself existed.
That's right.
So scholars came up with justifications much later, and it was with the experience of, say, Canada and Spain, Belgium, etc., that the asymmetric idea gets, you know, gets moving. So I think India, as you say, Alok, is much ahead of that.
And then how do we think about how the experience of asymmetric federalism has played out? And I particularly speak about one context, or I would love to sort of talk a little bit more about the way in which asymmetric federal arrangements have played out in the electoral competition at the state level. And what that has meant for both state-level politics and the way in which, in the other way around, which is the way in which these debates are framed in national elections, particularly more recently.
So if we are we speaking of the JNK case or some in other locations as well?
I think more recently the experience would be the JNK example. Not so much for the question of electoral competition in JNK. I think that's a broader question. But I think the latter is something that we would love to talk about in the context of JNK especially.
Okay, so we'll talk about it maybe in the context of the idea of the BJP and what it's doing with the CAA and so on.
Sure.
In that context, I could speak of the asymmetric federalism.
Yes, please.
Okay, so I think the BJP's imagination of what India is, I think, different from a lot of what we had thought of it, or what most of us must have done in our own school textbooks, etc. The idea of how do you imagine a nation, that's very different. And here I think we should go to a writing that came out sometime in 2012, where there was these three scholars, Alfred Stephen, Juan Linz, and Yogendra Yadav, who make a distinction between what they call as nation-state and state-nations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So in nation-state, the basic idea is that the boundaries, territorial boundaries of the nation coincide with the cultural boundaries. So within a nation, you will have only one dominant cultural entity that exists.
Right.
Whereas in a state nation, there is this recognition of diversity. There is this recognition that there can be both complementary identities and multiple identities that could actually exist together. A good example of this is that maybe I could be somebody, I could be a Tamil and I could be an Indian at the same time.
Yes.
So the scope for that doesn't exist in a nation state. Whereas in a state nation state, this diversity is celebrated. And that's where the connection to asymmetric federalism is. So if you celebrate diversity, if that is what your idea of a nation is, then there should be mechanisms to protect these diversities. And therefore, asymmetric federalism is a very useful mechanism for taking care of diversity that exist in of different types that exist in different parts of the country.
Correct. And this is, I guess, perhaps the way in which the functional intersects with the normative, or, you know, with the normative in mind, because that relates to the idea of the way the nation is framed. Asymmetric federalism is therefore enacted. I am reminded actually of an episode we did very recently with a film critic, M.K. Raghavendra. And he brought up this idea of how regional cinema portrays an identity of an individual which coexists with a broader national identity, and the two sometimes are at odds with each other but coexist in every individual.
Yeah.
I think that is the cinematic way of speaking to the point you just made.
Yeah.
Yes, I think it says the same thing, right?
And actually, one point that I sort of want to develop, and I sort of wrote this in a very, it is a sort of response to and in the context of certain debates that were going on after 370 was repealed, is, in a sense, it's also a larger normative point, is that is asymmetric federalism perhaps the way to go for India, and not just say for the peripheries, because as it stands, the even if you take out 370 in Jammu and Kashmir, most of the provisions which create asymmetric federalism in India relate either to the Northeast or some very small parts of, say, Karnataka and Telangana. No, even Telangana, I think it's still there, actually. It relates only to Karnataka and in some parts of Karnataka and Telangana. Would it, I mean, in a sense, it was a slightly provocative piece that I wrote, and I thought we could talk a little bit about it. Would it make sense for each Indian state to create, have its own bargain with the nation to come up with a different model of federal relations instead of having the same thing with a few exceptions? Like, as it still stands in India, asymmetric federalism seems to be somewhat of an exception, at least de jure asymmetric federalism is a somewhat of an exception to the larger idea that each state's relation with the Indian nation is the same.
Right. So, when you look at the literature on federalism, they actually expect that there will be this constant bargaining.
Right.
It is not something given.
Okay.
And even the literature, and let me use an analogy here that might be a better thing to do, is that, for example, it is actually very difficult to maintain a federation. It's like you learn to cycle.
Right.
And you need to constantly, you want to go forward, and yet you need to maintain balance.
That's right.
So federalism is also something like that.
Okay.
Like, you need to constantly accommodate these diversities that will keep coming up with greater demands, something here, something there. And yet you need to move forward.
Right.
So how do you balance yourself? Take care of these demands so that they don't spiral into some sort of secessionist demands or somebody saying that they don't want to be part of the union.
Yeah.
You want to keep them inside and still go forward.
Right.
And for the other side, they want to be in the federation. And at some point of time, they also don't want to be in the federation.
Right.
It's like a student who is in my class and same time doesn't want to be in the class as well.
I mean, I suppose those of us who have taught at some level have that feeling at some point. But I just sort of wondered, I mean, in the sense that, could each state potentially, and yeah, it's about balancing the demands also, but if I want to push a little bit further on that, if tomorrow Karnataka were to say, and were to sort of get a, I don't know, some sort of a provision in the constitution which would say that the central government will only hire people for jobs in Karnataka who are Kannada speakers. By the way, that's an actual demand. There's a very strong, there's a growing, I won't say very strong, but there's a growing demand that, you know, when the central government hires people to work in its offices in Karnataka, it should only post, it should only hire people who have worked there, not say talking about the IAS ranks and so on. Supposing if there were a demand like that to be made, and supposing if, you know, there's, it had sufficient credibility, would say the constitutional structure, and would, like, say the larger idea of a federalism be affected by something like this? Would it be either too much to one side, or do you see that as part of the balancing act?
I think that will have, in the long run, it will have a negative impact on the federal model if everyone were to do that.
Yeah.
Because even when you come, let's get back to the asymmetric idea, even within that, for instance, when you give special powers to a particular state, that takes care of only the larger minority, which is a national minority.
Correct.
It could be a majority in that particular state.
Yes.
So then what happens to regional minorities within that?
Yeah.
So, for example, migrants who come from other states. So I think this suggestion or this thing, demands like this, will have other effects.
Yeah.
And then it will have negative impact on, you want to remain as a nation. That will not be maintained at all. So I think we should somewhere find a balance which...
Yeah.
That's not the balance that we're looking for.
That's because it's an interesting thing to think about, because we are seeing such, I mean, at least at the local level, let's say it's not happening at the national level yet, we are seeing, say, various states, quote unquote, reserve jobs, because the term reserve doesn't really make sense, in, say, private sector jobs for locals and so on and so forth. And maybe this is going to be one of those tricky things for both the larger nation and the state to balance out, as you made use that great metaphor of a cycle, how do you ensure that you sufficiently account for diversity while you're sort of keeping the nation together?
One, we could also think whether this question comes up because of the particular economic situation we are in at this point of time.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it coming up because of the lack of employment opportunities around the country?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think I heard about it when we were on those between, say, 90, that high growth rate time. Such demands all came at all.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think this is more contextual, and it's probably will pass if we ever break free from this low growth stage.
Mm. So it's a function of the economy as much as it is related to the nature of the question itself in that sense.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes.
So I think that's there's one last point that I sort of wanted to bring before we wind up this episode. And that's it. This is to look at this issue. I mean, we've been speaking about it largely in the context of India. But one of the other great federal projects, if I want to call it that, is the something like, say, the European Union. And this is something that, at least for me, as somebody who studies federalism in India, who thinks about it, so I'd like to think about it, I find this Brexit process very fascinating. And in as much as I sort of try and troll a few people by sort of saying, the European Union should learn something about federalism from India. And I wonder if at some point, maybe the European Union has to have a all or nothing kind of a model, that maybe giving too many people too many options to stay in and out and choosing this or that can sometimes lead to the kinds of political and other crises that has led to something like Brexit.
Yes, I think if you were to make a comparison between India and Brexit, I think Brexit also, why Britain went out, would also be because I think they were getting too centralized.
Okay.
I think you were just wanted to change everything at one go and have everything centralized with the European Union. I think that's where the resistance starts coming in. So I don't think they got their balance right.
Okay.
So I would say that you still need to give these different spaces to states. And you need to work with that.
Right.
Nobody wanted to come and become one union. Like union in the sense that everybody put everything, give off everything.
Right.
But they all want to maintain their distinctiveness.
Yes.
And yet enjoy the benefits of being in the union.
Right.
And that's a very difficult balance.
Yeah.
So I think, as you say, more you keep looking at India, and I think we need to appreciate that.
It is, and it's quite a remarkable thing, keeping a country as diverse, as distinct in so many different ways, and as difficult as India, somewhat together. Not to say that a perfect job has been done and everything could be much better. I think what something like Brexit tells us that, even if we can't fit it into neat theoretical framework, something has been struck about that balance.
Yeah.
That balance that keeps enough of it going at the same time without falling apart, that manages to keep us going.
Yeah, and I also think there's, to some extent, something to be made of the point that you made earlier in the context of the work of Stepan, Linz and Yadav, which is the idea that these are nations before they are components of another entity, in that the territorial boundaries and the identity in very many of the European Union nations does coincide.
Yeah.
And they are the classic example that is put forth when we do talk about the idea of nation states.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, that's all that we have time for. Thank you so much, Kailash, for being on our podcast once again.
I'm sure we're going to want to talk to you soon,
yes.
Kailash. I think particularly in the context of your work on welfare, I feel like that episode is coming up very
sometime
shortly
soon.
In the next season, perhaps.
Yes. Okay, thank you for having me here.
Yes. And thank you all for tuning into this episode. We'll be back with more episodes shortly. Thank you. Bye-bye.